So I always admit to having multiple hustles as far as potential streams of income. And one of my most proud and most successful affiliations has been with Writer's Block Coffee, which you've heard of at the top of the show. But what I found very funny is a little company called ShipABagOfDicks.com. I sent this to my cousin as there to be funny, but you should just let people know that if someone sends you a bag of gummy dicks or rainbow flavored dicks or rainbow candy, rainbow looking penises, as well as a full 6-inch, 12-inch chocolate penis, it's not that you mean to be mean to them. It's supposed to be, the intent is lighthearted and a humorous joke. And it's designed to amuse the recipient. Because it's not, they don't really have it as a way to send it not anonymously. Please let the person know that you're sending them a bag of penises and a glitter bomb. Because you think they are the bomb. And basically, by purchasing their products, you represent that you're not trying to use them to harass the recipient in any or unlawful way or purpose. It's just to be funny. But for those persons that you can't stand, this is a great way to get these bozos. They'll be washing glitter out of their nose or rinsing glitter out of their nose for weeks and also vacuuming it up off their floor. And you can tell them in a flavorful way to eat a penis. So ShipABagOfDicks.com is where you can actually send a very humorous joke or get back at someone you can't stand. Use my promo code TIFROGOTJOKES to get 20% off your order and shipping, and I get a nice little commission. So navigate to shipabagofdicks.com/TIFROGOTJOKES. Use my promo code TIFROGOTJOKES to get 20% off of your order. Another episode of Tennessee Fro is Reading. I'm your host, Felicia Baxter. In this episode, I plan to discuss why this administration or America needs to break up with the Republican Party and why I may have to break up with America if it doesn't happen. I will also discuss the lead up to the debates as well as the first part of white fragility. That full discussion is going to be postponed until next week, but I think there is a lot to be said by other reviewers, and a sneak peek, and hopefully I will be able to get some good writing in as far as my next episode 5 of Survivor Code. I've decided to have an element of that where she actually, the main character Kat, stops off at Bar Harbor before she heads south to Tennessee. And maybe there's also going to be an element where she actually goes to a different tropical island like Barbados or elsewhere. I think that's timely in the current political and economic climate, that there are a lot of people possibly considering that. So I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I've enjoyed creating it, and thank you for listening. week has been especially hard to navigate for me anyways, from an emotional standpoint. I'm one of those people that it always seems like something's always about to pop off, or I have a feeling of anxiety or fear, just as my baseline. Since I've actually come off the road as a traveling provider, and also as a trainer, and also as a Go Live consultant, I've had time to reflect and worry about stuff that, you know, you don't really have to worry about. But in particular this past week, and I know I'm not alone, it's been just one big jam-packed free-for-all of anxiety and anger. It started with the debacle that was the debate last week. It was just a testament to stupidity and crassness and low class. And then it was a way to produce one of the worst reality shows of our times. It was like the Kardashians on crack, literally. We start off with the stupid occupant of the White House heckling Vice President Joe Biden during the debates. And it basically devolved into a yo mama kind of thing. And then not even a couple of days after that, there was a tweet that was released in the middle of the night that nobody would have seen unless somebody from Bloomberg News didn't report it. But this fool tested positive for the deadly coronavirus. But wait, it gets worse. Not only did we now know that he was already probably positive and they were lying since Tuesday's debates. That's why he showed up late, because they gave him some Motrin, waited for him to stop spiking fevers before they tested his temperature. And they were lying about the last time his negative test. I want to put, and I'm almost tempted to report his doctor to the board because of negligence. If you have somebody that is willfully spreading a deadly disease, you need to put that in check, and that needs to be reported. Coronavirus is a reportable disease, and you basically cover for this fool? Yeah, HIPAA be damned. His ass need to be reported, or you're going to be put on blast for your complicity in this shit. Every time they release some dumb is right around the time of the evening news, right around the 11 o'clock news. It dominates everything on CNN. It's like we can't get enough of this. You posing and riding around with no mask on and exposing your Secret Service agents. You having photo ops as Marine One flies into the White House. You get the best care, and even though you have not paid any taxes in about 15 years, you get the best care when most of the Americans can't get the same access to care. Their rationing is crap, and 211,000 people have died, have lost their life to corona. You keep still downplaying, saying that it's great that I got it. I got this amazing miracle medication that nobody has access to except your dumb ass. And all you had to do was wear a mask. And this is also ticking me off because I spent so much time scripting this part of the segment. I'm wasted 4 to 5 minutes of my writing capabilities still talking about this fool. I don't think we need to not forget about the seriousness of corona. So I will continue to verbalize my awareness and my concern about the rising numbers now in my home state of Tennessee, and also in Kentucky, and also in North Carolina, and also just the entire Southeast and Midwest. But what I will not do is pander to the shenanigans of this inept administration. I can't. I won't. I just don't know how you can expect us to recover from this if you don't control the pandemic. It's not a presentation of power, because it has you, and this is how Trump
has presented himself since he was young. He had all of the veneer of power and all of the looks of power, but he was just one broke ass dumbass with probably dyslexia from Brooklyn or Queens. So you posing with your mask off and giving the thumbs up on the steps of the White House does nothing for somebody like me, that because I see you sucking air worse than I do bringing groceries up my damn stairs. And I don't even have corona. I'm just a big ass girl. But you had coronavirus. You lied to the American people. You lied to the rest of the people in your administration. You put everybody at risk, all to have the appearance of power, when you just that weakling little boy that could not get his daddy's attention. That is who you are. And you'll always be that little hand, weakling little boy that couldn't get his father's attention. But they got something for your ass. Even in spite of the Attorney General's obvious cover up, because they know once they release your tax records and there's a formal review and audit, that you gonna have to probably end up doing time. Because you can't tell me you $5 billion up when we know you owe almost several billion dollars just to the IRS. As Al Capone, how they got him. It wasn't for any murders. It was because of RICO and he didn't pay his damn taxes. That's how they actually got that. And you said, you told us 4 years ago, it ain't fake news when you basically called out Hillary Clinton and said, you stupid, I don't pay taxes and that made me a smart man. No, that made you a mark and you made you implicit in your own demise. And I'm hopeful that the state of New York gets all their cash. I'm hopeful that everyone that's waiting for you to stop hiding in the White House go come after you. And they're going to get their money. They're going to extract their pound of flesh from your ass. Because you can't keep taking and wasting money and loss and not pay for it. That's just not fair. And that is how what your downfall is going to be. Your own big damn mouth. And also to all of those guides and everybody else, I have two separate things. For the people that knowingly support and try to cover up this fool, shame on you for not wearing a mask and getting sick and spreading this crap and leading another hotspot right in the White House. Common sense should not, loyalty does not trump common sense. You can be loyal to somebody, but you still need to call them out on their shit. And for all of you rolling around the White House like nobody else mattered but this fool, and you were complicit in the cover up, you didn't tell us that he was testing positive. You didn't do your due diligence to protect everybody else. It's not the Trump show. It is about America. From your doctor to your press secretary to all of those senior advisors, all of you are complicit in this crap. And all of y'all need to be held accountable for it. And that's just right. And I'm just kind of tired of talking about the nonsense because y'all know we're all adults. Y'all know what to do. I think the Senate and all of you guys are no count. I think the Republicans' zeal to basically cheat and support this fool just to hold up their overall conservative agenda to completely turn this back to the 1950s of bigotry and racism, where there's no women right and I can't even fucking vote. I couldn't even have a job if we turn this shit all the way back to the 60s. So with that said, African Americans have the most dysfunctional relationship with the United States. And I'm tired of talking about it. I don't believe that you guys are willing to do anything about it. You rather see the destruction of democracy versus giving me my right to live and sleep peacefully in my damn bed. All I think about now, and I'm seriously contemplating getting the hell up out of here after it's going to take too many decades to undo the nonsense of the past 4 years. I want to be somewhere where it's warm. I'm sitting with my fat feet crossed with the fruity adult beverage on a beach and letting y'all do the full reset, because that's what's going to need to happen. before all of this stuff clears up. And it's just not tenable for me to allow and to watch the downfall of this democracy. Just because you are in a power grab, just because you think the rest of the government needs to be conservative and bend to your will. That's wrong. I can't stay here if that's what's going to end up going down. There's no mayor, conservative mayor, that's going to be able to protect me from that nonsense. And that's my 2 cents worth. Now that I'm back in Tennessee full time, of all places, I actually can enjoy reading the Sunday New York Times from cover to cover because I get it delivered right to my house. Except for this week, it was a little sketch. I also get the local paper, the Times Free Press, and somebody jacked my paper. However, I was still able to add multiple things to my chat, just chatterbooks for my reading of the New York book review. Hot coffee, the book review style section, Times Magazine, that makes it a great Sunday for me. So in addition to, I actually not only added several books, I actually created several new lists to chatterbooks. And one of it is the FUBU, for you, for us, by us. There's so many amazing authors and that don't get a lot of credibility, don't get a lot of coverage, but I think they deserve a place in my consciousness as well as being offered for sale in the bookstore. One of those things is Anxious People, Dark Humor, Drama, and Mystery. It's on the New York sellers list. I added A Man Called Ove. It says, meet Ove. He's a curmudgeon, the kind of man who points at people at dislikes as if they are burglars caught outside his bedroom window. He has staunch principles, strict routines, and a short fuse. He's the bitter neighbor from hell, but he's actually lovable. And I am Ove. This is Frederick Bachman's book, as well as A Measure of Belonging. A compilation of 21 writers of colors in their take on the American South and their experience. The New York Review says this is a fierce collection that celebrates incredible diversity in the contemporary South by featuring essays by 21 of the finest young writers of color living and working in the region today who address the central question, who is welcome? Then I added They Threw Us Away by Daniel Krauss. Welcome to Teddy Saga, a gripping new middle grade trilogy from the New York Times bestselling author and illustrator Ravina Kai. Buddy wakes up in the middle of a garbage dump filled with certain awareness. He's a teddy bear. He spent time at a store waiting for his future to begin, and he's meant for a loving arms of a child. Now he knows one more thing, something has gone terribly wrong, because dude, as teddy bear, is in the middle of a garbage dump. And then I love this one called Skunk and Badger by Amy Timberlake. These additions to the children's section is some of the books that I actually would have hoped that were available to me, that were bought for me, or that someone thought I would enjoy reading. Instead, I was reading Roots, Mandingo, yes, and Salem's Lot, all in the third grade, don't ask. But this book is about two unlikely pair, Wallace and Gromit meets Winnie the Pooh in a fresh take on a classic odd couple friendship. From the Newbery Honor author Amy Timberlake, with full color and black and white illustrations throughout the book. And it's hysterical because no one really wants a skunk, but this skunk shows up on the badger's doorsteps and becomes his roommate, and they basically the skunk upends everything in the badger's life, tells her Flip the wrong animal is sprayed. And then there's a whole bunch of chickens. So it's a great read. And I suggest that you buy it for your kids. There's the book Sisters by Daisy Johnson. Born just 10 months apart, July and September. Are thick as thieves, never needing anyone but each other. Now following a case of school bullying, the teens have moved away with their single mother to a long abandoned family home near the shore. This actually is set in England, and it's about two white girls, but it actually seems like it would be a good read. There's always this creeping sense of dread and unease descends into the house. Meanwhile, outside, the sisters push boundaries of behavior until a series of shocking encounters test the limit of their shared experience and force the shocking revelations about the girls' past and future. This is definitely on the FUBU list, Black Bottom Saints by Alice Randall. It's an enthralling literary tour de force that pays tribute to Detroit's legendary neighborhood, a mecca for jazz, sports, and politics. This book is a powerful blend of fact and imagination, reminiscent of E.L. Doctorow's classic novel, Ragtime, and Marlon James' book award-winning A Brief History of Seven Killings. So that's another wonderful book that you can actually pick up on my site. I Give It to You by Valerie Martin, a timeless story of family war and betrayal set around an ancient ancestral home in Tuscan courtside from a best-selling novelist, Valerie Martin. Of course, that is actually on the Just a General Book Club list. And then The Last Great Road Bum. This is by Hector Tobar. It's a peripatetic true story of a naive son of Urbana, Illinois, who died fighting with the guerrillas in El Salvador into the great American novel of our times. The Memory Monster by Yishal Sarid. It's a brilliant story. This is one of the captions from the New York Times. That serves as a brave sharp-tooth brief against letting the past devour the present. It's a harrowing parable of a young historian who becomes consumed by the memory of the Holocaust. It's haunting because when the captive becomes the abuser, you understand how they get there, but it does not excuse their behavior. And in the anti-racist section, I added several books. I just don't really feel like, I'm not giving a summary because I don't really feel like reading your ass. Basically, research the books and if it would be great if you would comment on certain editions. But one of those is The White Fragility and White Negroes that I did add. There's A Saint from Texas by Edmund White Yvette. It's about Yvonne and Yvette Crawford, twin sisters born on a patch of the East Texas prairie, but their lives and fates are dramatically changed when the family discovers oil. They go their separate ways, one to a convent, one to society. As the decades unfold, Yvonne will ascend the highest ranks of Parisian society as Yvette gives herself to Jericho, but they all end up back in their ancestral home. There's Winter Counts by David Heska. This is a Lakota tribe. He's a part of the Lakota tribe. It's a thriller about a vigilante on a Native American reservation who embarks on a dangerous mission to track down the source of the heroin influx. And that's actually apropos for today. And I really liked this past weekend. It was very relaxing until I got a really ridiculous call about someone flouting the COVID pandemic. But I believe all of these additions will feed your soul, feed your mind, and will be entertaining in sometimes these bleak days. And I'm really serious about that, y'all. I would really love to hear from you guys as far as what books I need to add to the ever-growing list in my bookstore. I take it seriously. I'll check it out. And then I'll give you a shout out if you add it. So let me know what you think about my additions and then suggest more of your own. FUBU White Progressives, a response to John McWhorter's piece, the dehumanizing condescension of white fragility. So it is a popular book that combats racism but talks down to black people. I would not have to be so heavily scripted during this particular part of the segment, because if I could just keep on script and keep on task. But I thought this particular piece needed to be kind of structured because of the subject matter. So I got a lot done today, more so than I actually thought. And I'm going to probably be spending a lot of the time, because I still have about 90 minutes before the debate start at 9 o'clock for the VP, where I think I'll be able to record this section as well as why I want to break up with America, but that's neither here nor there. So this comes, my reactions or my opinion on this particular piece comes as part, as far as Robin DiAngelo's book, White Fragility. I was in a book club that my friend Janelle invited me to about her super woke friend, and they were going to be reading this book. So today, I basically finished reading the piece as well as writing up the reaction to the piece by John McWhorter. This book also, so this review, excuse me, the review itself was posted in The Atlantic on July 15th. And I wanted to gather as much information about his background as well as her background. And since I was going to basically postpone my discussion with Cheryl, I was actually going to, it just gives me more time to do a little bit more research onto the background and some of why some of these opinions are as flaky as they are. And I also wanted to do, it also gave me time to also compare the rankings on Amazon about hers and his book. One of his books, actually the most recent book, was actually published in 2006. And I'm not sure how well it was received at that time, but right now it's ranked number 404,336 in books. This is his 2006 Winning the Race Beyond the Crisis of Black Americans. It's ranked 617 in Minority Demographic Studies, 823 in African American History, and 2650 in Discrimination and Racism. His other book, Losing the Race, The Self-Sabotage in Black America, which he dropped in 2001, is actually ranked much higher. It's 30,562, number 46 in Philosophy and Social Aspects of Education, number 73 in Minority Demographic Studies, which is higher than his 2006 book. And number 259 in African American Demographic Studies. However, White Fragility, which was released in 2018, is now ranked number 53 in the top 100 of books. Number one in Ethnic Demographic Studies. Number one in Cultural Anthropology. Number one in Discrimination and in Racism, which makes me think that his dig at just getting around to reading it this year and after it shot up to fame after George Floyd, it doesn't seem that his books actually was afforded such treatment. So it just made me think that he had a little bit, this was a little bit going to be a little bit testy and a little bit of hateration. A few points about white fragility, and I believe the author makes this clear from the beginning in the introduction, because she says this book is intended for us, meaning white progressives who so often, despite their conscious intentions, make life so difficult for people of color. She believes that white progressives cause the most daily damage to people of color. She defines it as white progressives are those people that think they're not racist or are less racist, or they're in the choir or they already get it. She thinks she will explain the phenomena of white fragility and how it protects racial inequity and what we might do to do about it. So in McWhorter's piece, he basically calls all of her authority and her statements are basically dehumanizing condescension. And I reacted to several different levels to that point. He actually, as I said, her throwing shade at that he just got around to reading it and how it went to the top of the charts. That was one thing that I took issue with. And also, he says that, and this is what people that will stab you in the back and twist it in while smiling in your face, because he says it, even though despite sincere intentions of the author, the book diminishes Black people in the name of dignifying us. And I didn't see it as that. She basically pointed out several things about how the humiliations and how we're pounded on for centuries, you know, it didn't take away from the props or the strides and the Obamas and the Martin Luther Kings, etc. So it would be like ultra white. It would be like ultra woke white people or Black people saying that you're not Black enough. And basically he's saying that she's too white to basically write about white people's trials to become an anti-racist. And it looks like he basically said that she could have done a better job with it, which I completely agree with, but it was a primer. Very few books have been written with this much candor for white people, about white people's ish. So sorry they didn't pick up your book, and she basically had a book ripe, I should say, for the times. And as I go on to believe, I do believe that this book is just skimming the surface, and the most of the iceberg is underneath the water. She made a great effort to basically ease her people into finding out what was wrong with their thinking. And she also pointed out the pervasiveness of racism in our culture and that most white people are just not aware of it. This is based on her experience, and it's setting up the case to how one white person can make another or can help another white person to become anti-racist. And he basically lost me because he went off on some Terry Crews-esque goofy rampage about just because it didn't happen to me, that means it didn't happen to the rest of us. That's not true. I think that type of idiocracy it has no place when you're commenting on a work of an educator or a sociological like thesis or work. Making it at the forefront of the few and sundry ways that racism affects us, from fake crocodile tears to the actual murdering of us on the evening news, and just little thing about redlining our neighborhoods and making unrealistic expectations about credit. Those little things are happening in real time. Or you have people and they're being recorded making a false statement to the police as they choke their dog, like that Amy Cooper bitch did. And you can't tell me that just the recently lynching was just banned. And that was one of the useful and terror that the Klan and all white Americans used down in the beginning of the 20th century. that Ida B. Wells fought against. So do I think that this book, it's a great start, but it's not an end-all be-all. It did feel like the outline for a diversity training session that doesn't even skim the surface. I think it does smack of a sequel. Other people are waiting for the sequel to drop because I'm wondering what, if you say the work is never ending to end anti-racism, she's actually right, because I think this is not a one and done type of thing. I don't think this book is a one and done. I think it basically brings up several issues and ideas that can be explored and that need to be explored and expanded upon, and a true blueprint for what work has to be done for a so-called progressive to become an anti-racist. For what it is, 158 pages of, it's a great and a potentially fast read, but I think it does scream for a sequel. And the bottom line is, who better to write about and how to rectify it than another white person? And again, and I want to stress this, it's not an end, it's the beginning. You need to fact check it. You need to ask an African-American, although some in a part of the book, she discourages that. I think you're not going to know about my experience until you basically ask a real life person. You're not going to learn about the extent, the breadth, the width of the Black experience by watching Spike Lee movies. That's just one aspect and one part of our culture. As somebody that is done and seen and done things, if you really want to learn. And there's a way to be respectful about that. And I'm looking forward to further discussions about this in the upcoming weeks. And I will also post my discussion with Cheryl, another professional African-American woman, as we navigate through this book and we expand upon it. And I hope you will enjoy it as much as I have. I'm sure I will. So I lasted to the end of the VP debates, and I didn't blow a gasket. I am so glad that I figured out early on the only way I wasn't going to get the cops called on me for yelling and cussing was muting that lying piece of crap, Mike Pence, every time he opened up his mouth. He has proven, and that administration has proven time and time again, what Kamala said. They don't know how to be honest. I existed and I didn't go off when I started muting him. He's just like every army recruiter. If their lips are moving, they lie. These fools, when his lips are moving, he was lying. First, I'm going to have to drag her butt because I thought she was absolute garbage. This Susan Page, supposedly the bureau chief of USA Today, was garbage. She had even less control than the first moderator. They should have got Samuel L. Jackson or Madea. I'm just saying they could have done a better job. Or someone more in line if you want a journalist, like Don Lemon or Chris Cuomo. I would have paid cash money to see that. That would have been pure entertainment. And I wish they had cut off the mics because, you know, nobody paid attention to the time nor to answer the question directly. But I do think Kamala Harris did a better job than Pence. It wasn't a debacle like last week. There were several points that I wanted to point out. The crime bill, climate change, with the EPA and racial justice and gutting of our healthcare system, the dealing with the coronavirus. Pence started off lying right at the beginning. Was it unbelievable or unexpected? No. I knew he was going to lie, but he waited 6 minutes, 7 minutes in. You can't be polite. It's really wild that you can smile and you can still be stabby and impolite. But never answered any of those questions, never owned up to the complicity in the mismanagement of the coronavirus, never owned up to the dissolution of the games put in by Joe Biden and the Obama administration. As far as the economy, now it's obliterated. Never answered any of those things. And I don't think anyone with a mind would expect any of them to respond, or that anyone in the administration to respond truthfully to any of those things. So it went as far as we expected. I expected Kamala Harris to hold her own. And she performed adequately. But it's like a no-brainer. If you at this point, you still don't know who you're going to vote for, you crazy, because this was just another florid example of why you should not vote for the Republicans and why it is imperative that we all vote, and we basically have to vote straight Democratic, because these fools are crazy. I've never seen such lies in all my life. Even with some sweet Italian sparkling wine, I just couldn't even tolerate. This was almost hardly tolerable, but at least it's over. And do I think I'm going to watch the second one? Probably not. I know I'm not watching second presidential debates. I don't have the strength to deal with that. But that's where I am. On the main issues, Pence is a lying son of a gun. Kamala Harris held her own. And that's all I got to say about that. No surprises, in actuality. So that's how I'm going to end this episode of Tennessee Pro with Reading. I hope you've enjoyed this as much as I've enjoyed creating it, because of time constraints today and what is actually going on in our world with coronavirus and with the vice presidential debate. I was not able to do any significant updates to my fictional podcast, Survivor Mode. But I'm hopeful in the upcoming days I'll be able to make a dent in that and be able to showcase my creative job. I am flabbergasted by the events of the last few days, and I'm hopeful that we will actually be able to focus on what is important to us and important to this nation. That is the fight for the coronavirus outside of the nonsense in the White House. How the guy that the piece of trash policeman that killed George Floyd, how he paid $1 million bond. Who stroked that check? These are the types of questions I'm going to be asking in the next day. And just a further deeper dive as far as racial divides and racial harmony, etc. And also navigate to my online bookstore, Chatterbooks, because I will have updated it to include some of the books, or actually all of the books that I basically spoke about in this today's episode. And I actually forgot that I actually did that. And that was supposed to be a large part of this episode, where I talk about what I enjoy. And one of the things I enjoy is finding the books and reading the New York Times book review and updating my online bookstore with some findings from that, as well as White Fragility. I'm hesitant to add the books from John McWhorter, because I don't know if they actually have a place on it. The bookstore, I'm going to need to make sure it's no Hotep Conspiracy, Angry Black Dude. And if it's applicable to racial harmony, don't know. But I may be adding it in the upcoming days. And I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I've enjoyed creating it. And don't forget, have to do a plug because I got to make that cash. Navigate to shipabagofdicks.com using my promo code 10FROGOTJOKES to get 10% off of shipping and your order, as well as Writer's Block Coffee using the promo code 10FRO is greeting, also to get a percentage off of your order and shipping. And again, join me next time in the episode where I keep talking about things that interest me and talking to you about books that I've read that also interest me. And y'all have a nice evening, okay? Bye.